The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, I'm back. Who would have thunk it? Oh, my God. Up to the satellite, down to your phone. It's just amazing. It's all fucking magic is what it is. It's Monday night, May 6, 2024. It's 11 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia. And we're here where I'm sitting in Northeast Minneapolis. It's 10 p.m. Central Daylight Time. I am Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters Tonight. This is episode number 115, if you're marking your bingo cards at home. Hello. How are you doing? I'll tell you how I'm doing. Well, I'm taking a week off in June. I have to have hip surgery. I've fallen apart. You know, here's the deal. I've told you this before. I'm 68 years old. I haven't told you this. Up until 61, I got to 61, I thought, you know, I beat this fucking aging thing. I got this. And then everything fell apart. So I had heart surgery when I was 65 in January 21. That was the first time in my life I'd ever been in a hospital. I mean, I had remarkably good health all my life. And God knows, you know, knock on wood, I really appreciate it. I know not everybody can say that. But man, since then, holy shit. So I'm hobbling around. I'm in quite a lot of pain. I'm trying not to take the Tylenol. Is starting not to work. I've been gulping on Tylenol like it's candy, and it's starting to. And so I have this. We're gonna take the first week of June off, June 3rd through 6th, whatever that is, because I have surgery on June 3rd. So. I'll just email in the guys about the month in review panel. Normally, it would be on what is Memorial Day, and we want to do that anyway. But I'm trying to get, I want to reschedule. I'd usually schedule it for the following Monday, but no, can't do that. Can't have a surgery. So we'll get it all. We'll get it figured out, folks. We got it going on. We do. You know that. So what else is happening? I'll tell you what's happening. It's Monday, a monologue Monday. So this is the part where you call in. And normally, we don't have a guest tonight. You call in. Mondays, we generally don't have guests because we had a long weekend, got a lot of news to plow through. And so this is a part you can call in if you want. You can use these numbers right here. First of all, you can call in with your camera. This is if you've never seen this show before, this is the first talk show in America where you can actually make call in with a video phone call. Now, that's not me saying that. Talkers Magazine actually said that. Very first one. And it's very simple to do. It's actually easier than making a FaceTime call, but it's kind of weird because you have to go to a certain web page to do it. Yeah, we got a web page that hooks up to your camera. I know it doesn't make any, you know, intuitive sense to you, but it works great for us. So you go to this URL right here, jimatnight.com/call. There's a giant big blue button at the top of that page. You press that page, you're in the queue, you get to check your camera and mic, and you hit the join button at the bottom of the page. And you're in the queue, and I put you on. It's simple. You can do it. I mean, I'd ask every person that calls in, first person, David from San Francisco, longtime call-in on my previous radio shows. He said the hardest thing about it was actually finding the webpage. He said, and he's right. It is. Once you go to the webpage, it's super simple. It's easier than making a FaceTime call. You can do this. But if you don't want your face on the screen on the show, I understand. So now we have, as of February, we have a dial-in telephone number, 563-999-3435. You dial that's provided to us by Blog Talk Radio. You dial that telephone number. You get to hear the sexy British lady. She tells you you're going to put in the queue. And as soon as I get a chance, I'll put you on. Okay. That, of course, that's audio only. Duh. Now, one more thing. This number right here, 408-458-5088. You can send us texts in real time. I got a monitor off to the side here. I can see the texts. And we do get them. Like, for example, Jeff Meyer was on last Thursday. Excuse me. He was on Thursday. And we got text people texting him for him. You know, you can text in. I'll read the text. If you're on one of the chat rooms, on one of the video platforms we're using, I don't look at those. I know everyone says, well, why not? Well, because first of all, there's five of them. And I don't want to, we can't mix them up. And I don't want to, I know people do these shows and they read the text chat. I don't want to do that. It's like, we got a number here. You call in. It's very simple. You call in with a text and I'll read your text and I'll put it on the screen if I want. I'm not going to plow through the text chat and try to find something to interest you. There you go. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. So, like I said, today is Monologue Monday. So I got the news. We've got about an hour or so of news we're going to plow through here from the weekend and from today. Tomorrow, this is really cool. Oh, Jesus. Holy shit. I think I've lost my notes. Oh, here they are. Hold on. Okay, tomorrow, we got Robert Powell is going to be our guest. He's written a book called UFOs, A Scientist Explains What We Know and What We Don't Know. And he's a scientist, all right. Matter of fact, one of his claims to fame is he's one of the developers of flash computer memory. And I actually want to ask him about that. Because, you know, now if you know anything about the spinning hard drives that were in computers for years and years, you know, most computers, well, none of them are sold with them anymore. And the majority of computers now, I'd say, don't have them. But that was the only type of memory we had for the longest time. And that was simple. They're basically giant photograph records that run, the head floats 1 micron off the disk. The disk has to spin perfectly. Otherwise, the whole thing crashes. And that's often why it does. And that's a very simple concept. Although, and I've said this before, humans, we're really good at this. We're really good at taking primitive concepts and really, really perfecting them. I mean, just take vinyl records. Now, I spent most of my career in the music business. Last year, for the first time in the longest time, 20, 30 years, vinyl records outsold CDs again. That hasn't happened since like the early 80s. So, and people like the records. And I got a friend of mine, my niece, I was over at her house. She's 25 years old. Her boyfriend bought her a record player. Like, you know, who the hell would have known that? Shit. I mean, these things, you know, they were consigned to the dustbin 35 years ago. And now they're making a comeback. People think they sound good. Well, they do. They do sound good. From a purely technical level, they still don't sound as good as CDs. And everyone says, well, CDs sound cold. The reason CDs sound cold is because the music that's recorded on them, by and large, was mixed for analog recording 30 or 40 years ago. That's the reason. If you mix your CD for pressing on the CD, it should sound fantastic. One exception, and this is actually really important. This is one of the reasons vinyl records do sound so good. Low bass tones actually do reproduce better off of vinyl records than they do off of digital technology. They actually do. The reason is because the digital technology, you're sampling at 44.1 hertz a second. That's 44,000 times a second. And believe it or not, for really long waves, that's not long enough. That's the reason. So why did I get into all that? I got into all that because, Robert Powell was one of the inventors of flash memory. And I kind of sort of understand how flash memory works, but I still want him to tell us because my guess is you don't have a clue. That's my guess. So anyway, that was his day job. Now he's a full-time UFO investigator. He was the director of research for MUFON from 2007 to 2017, and he founded UFON Science Review Board. He was the founder of that, and now he's currently on the board of something called the Scientific Coalition for UAP Studies, which is a collection. It's kind of like UFON strictly for scientists. It's a collection of scientists who are investigating the UAP. Oh, fuck that. It's UFOs. Phenomena. And so that's now this is turned into his full-time job. And that's my, I'm guessing he made money off of the royalties of the flash drive thing. So he doesn't have to worry about working anymore. That's my guess. But anyway, he's written this new book. I've read most of it. I heartily recommend it to you. We're going to talk about it tomorrow. That's tomorrow, Tuesday. Wednesday, I'm taking the day off. Why? Doctor's appointments all afternoon. That's I got to get the whole ticker checked out again. And you're thinking, well, Jim, the show's at 10 o'clock at night, but oft times they give me some new drug and I don't react well to it. And I don't want to deal with it. So I'm just going to come home from the doctor's appointment and take a nap. That's what I'm going to do. Thursday. Now, this is really interesting. And the last time I talked to you about this last week, we've added another person. Thursday, we're having a UFO panel discussion. So here's the panel. It's our friend Jazz Shaw, the UFO writer for Salient Media. He comes on here regularly. It's him. It's John Greenwald from theblackvault.com. Now, John, first of all, you've seen John on every goddamn UFO show on television, all of them. Ancient Aliens, you know, he's on all this stuff. So his claim to fame is he started getting documents from the government via the Freedom of Information Act requests. So he's compiled now, and this is, I'm not an exaggeration. He has on his website at theblackvault.com for searching 3.39 million documents that he's collected through FOIA requests. And he knows how to do it. I just watched a video, his last video podcast about, which was quite long, and he admitted it was kind of dry, but the thing is, he had to make certain the information was transparent about how he got documents from the David Grush private hearings. He did get those documents, and they did send them to him. But he spent the first part of that video going through how to make these requests to make sure you get what you want. And yeah, he said it's very technical, very boring, but you got to know what you're doing, and he does. And so, I mean, this guy has broken more stuff than probably any other person in the UFO field regarding actual hard news. And that brings us to our third panelist, Mika Hanks. Mika is the founder and editor of thedebrief.org. That's at thedebrief.org. Now, this website is a science website that's set up. I mean, it's for everybody. You don't need a subscription. It's a public website. But in a lot of ways, it caters to scientists and defense contractors. And they break a lot of UFO news. As a matter of fact, and I can't actually remember this. I was trying to figure out if I could remember this or not. When Leslie Keene and Ralph Blumenthal wrote that article in the New York Times in December 2017 that actually blew the whole UFO thing wide open, they had a follow-up article that for some reason the New York Times couldn't publish. And I think that's because it was time sensitive. It's not that they didn't want to. They couldn't publish it when Keene and Blumenthal wanted them to. So they passed. So where did they go? Where did the Keene and Blumenthal go second? They went to the debrief. That's how important this place is. So the debrief published that follow-up article. And I can't remember what it was about, but I did read it. It was terrible. I can't remember the stuff. And I didn't bother to go looking, I got to admit. Even though I'm on the debrief regularly, I get a lot of stuff for our paranormal part three here from that website. So anyway, yeah, my point is that they break a whole lot of news, and he's been really good at this. And both of those guys, now here, I gotta admit, I didn't do any magic here. I Jazz and I were talking. I said we should do a UFO panel. He said yeah. He said let me see if I can dig up some friends. So both Greenwald and Hanks are two guys I want to have on here. I tried contacting both of them with no success. But of course, you know, Jazz, because he knows everybody, you know, he made it happen. So he arranged for this. I don't take any credit for this at all. But I'm going to lead the discussion, and I will ask pertinent questions. That's what I will do. So our sponsor is Klunk.com, and I'm going to bring the Klunk website up here, even though I can't scroll through it. So this is the Conk News website in real time. There, if you watched the show before, they're a sponsor. This website gets news stories from 75 different sources every 3 ounces every 3 hours, and their servers go out, collect the information, then come back and lay it out on the page in chronological order, regardless of the source, where the source is from. In other words, you know, it's not all from one thing and all from another thing. So the stories are mixed and matched with the very newest ones at the top, regardless of the source. Now, this page rolled over since I put it up. And so I don't know if you can't see it. I want to reference something that I just found on here. I have to set this up about a half hour before we go on. There's a story on the front page of Conk News from 100% Fed Up that says that the German magazine Der Spiegel, which is a very famous German publication, they say that they have information that at the Democratic National Convention this coming August, Biden is going to step down from the nomination and hand it over to Michelle Obama. Now, this has been rumored for quite a while, but Der Spiegel is the first publication that has actually come out and said that we actually have, they say they have some hard information on this. I mean, so, and I got to say, lately, the last few days, Biden's campaigning has been so pathetic, it's almost like he knows he's not running. That's occurred to me. And I even have that one of my talking points here. So it was really interesting. This kind of meshes what I was already thinking. It's like, you know, they've come out today. They came out with something. They decided their strategy is going to be less is more. Well, that's just bullshit. I mean, you know, and the thing is, staying in your basement might have helped when you were a candidate and there was a COVID pandemic. That might have, you know, you could justify it. Now, he's the frickin' president. You can't justify that. This guy can barely talk. And we know it. And I'm sure his family knows it, you know. Now, he's a bullheaded egomaniac. You know, it's really hilarious. People talking about Trump being an egomaniac. Trump is an egomaniac. Joe Biden and his quiet, folksy, uncle-type manner is just as bad, if not worse. So, I mean, I'm convinced that Biden truly thinks in his mind that he's the only person who can beat Trump. I really do think that. Now, but the thing is, that doesn't mean he wouldn't step down, especially if he's not feeling it anymore. I mean, it's plainly obvious his health is deteriorating. It's deteriorating by the day. And he might just decide that he doesn't want to do this anymore. You know, he wants to go to Delaware and sit on the beach and, you know, read his book, and that's it. And at this point, I want to blame him. You know, I don't like this guy, and I think he's been a mediocre politician his entire life. But still, the fact is, he's disintegrated. You know, I don't blame him for if he decides he wants to do this. You know, I mean, do I think Trump could beat Michelle Obama? Oh, yeah. I do. Matter of fact, all the surveys that have been taken, the polls that have been taken with her included, he still beats her. I don't think she could win. I don't. I think she's going to make it close. I do, but I don't know. I just don't. But anyway, my two bits. But I'm here to do that for you. That's what I do. I give you your two bits now. But the thing is, I can't scroll this page on the screen here. And I'm sure this is down. It was in the center column. I'm sure it's down in the column now because this is the way Conk works. New news comes in and fills in at the top. So you can go to this website at like 10 a.m. There's a good 2-3 hours of news to read on the page here. All the articles use the original headlines from the article, and the photos are from the article. And also, you'll notice I'm rolling my cursor around the screen and you can't see it. What the hell am I doing? That was awfully nice of them. They have a little billboard from the show at the top right. That's because they're the sponsor. They just put that in. So my thanks to Jeff Meyer and the people over there. But, you can come here and read it. There's 2-3 hours of news to read on the page. You can read it all. You can go back 5 hours later, and about 80% of it has changed. And the stuff that hasn't changed is at the bottom of the page, and you'll know when you get down there. So, I mean, this is a fantastic It's a closest thing to a real newspaper online that you'll find anywhere. And because everyone, you know, the slogan of the show is news is a commodity, and it is. We don't need to, you know, Congress need to hire another 100 journalists to do the same shit everyone else is doing everywhere else. So they have permission. They get the news from 75 different sources, and they lay it out on this page. And it's a really handy news source. It's free, ladies and germs. That's you. It's free. It doesn't cost anything. You don't have to even register. It's all on the front page. You'll see at the little menu, there's some other things on Conk, but the big deal is the front page. And even Jeff Meyer, the publisher, even he'll tell you that. So you don't have to. There you'll see in the middle of the middle column here, that's an ad. They have run ads on this page. They do that. But other than that, it's totally free and no registration needed access. So you should check this out. It's at conk.com, conk.com. But you should also check it out just because of that article I told you about. Now, I use Conk to put together the show. So get a lot of news from a lot of different sources. So it works out really well. But yeah, I found that really interesting that Der Spiegel is announcing that they're saying that Biden's going to drop out. I have no idea. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he says he's going to and agrees to, and then the last minute doesn't. Now, we probably never find that out, but still, I just think this guy, I mean, he's going to fucking beat Trump. That's what he thinks, you know? I mean, though, he's horribly behind in the polls, and this is like the real clear politics average. Trump is up like 4 or 5 points nationwide above the margin of error. And also, it depends on what poll you're talking about. He's ahead in all the battleground states except in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, where he's statistically tied. So there's that too. I mean, Joe's not going to get any better. You know, Joe's, it's the beginning of the end. Joe is dying. So, you know, so Maxine Waters comes on today. I'm starting to find this just hilarious. Well, first of all, two things happened on the last few days. I have to tell you, on Friday, a lot of the campuses around the country decided they had enough of this bullshit, and they decided they'd bring the police in and clean all these encampments up. Okay, there's that. And simultaneously, the Democrats are going back on the warpath saying that Trump is Hitler and that if he wins election, re-election, he's going to shut down the democracy and shut down the government and become a dictator and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like, as far as they can remember, he was never president before. And of course he was. And then on top of that, this is my talking points too. Oh, NPR reporter, NPR, National Public Radio, comes on I don't know if it was All Things Considered or one of those shows this weekend, and she says that she went to talk to the public, and she is shocked by the amount of nostalgia people have for the Trump era. Why? Well, Jesus, their money went farther. God, huh? So what kind of bubble are you in? And this is the thing that's really bothering me. These people, when I mean these people, I mean especially the liberal media, not necessarily liberals per se, the leftists, they're off on the deep end. I mean, you know, they're coordinating these protests. I don't think I have to tell you, I think you've probably heard this by now, that Wall Street Journal and other publications have now found real solid evidence that the kids themselves aren't driving these protests. They're being driven by outside forces, mostly NGOs and PACs, super PACs, and all this sort of stuff that are getting a lot of this money. And a lot of the money is coming from people who also donate money to Biden's campaign. There's a lot of leftists who are basically anarchists and Marxists at heart. I mean, I've always said this, that in his heart of hearts, Barry Obama is a socialist. And when he hits his head into the pillow at night, he dreams socialist dreams. It's a very important point that book he wrote is not called Dreams for My Father. It's called Dreams. No, it's not called Dreams of My Father. It's called Dreams for My Father. That's what that's called. And he went on to explain that that's the reason. His father was basically a radical. And now I guess young Barry is too, although young Barry managed to become president. So in the description for the show tonight, I put down the fact that I'm going to have a little my get off my lawn moment here around these kids. These kids are idiots. They're morons. On our month in review panel a week ago tonight, so Tim Conaway is on along with Don Zorro and Larry Newman, and Tim said the same thing I did in different words, and I talked to him about this afterwards. He called these protests are not. They're generic, and I said they're not organic. And I was comparing them to Vietnam 60 years ago, and he was too. And I still compare them to Vietnam. There's no comparison. Here's the reason. The kids in the 1960s, they were actually losing their friends. It was their friends that were fighting in a war. Their friends were getting called over and sent to Vietnam, right? In other words, it was an internal thing going on within the United States. And their kids were getting shot and killed, 55,000 of them, actually. And I hate to say it, nothing was accomplished. I mean, no one wants to hear that, and especially I have Vietnam vets in my family. You know, I don't think they like it when I say that, but the harsh truth is that we lost 55,000 people more or less for nothing. As soon as we pulled out, the North Vietnamese won the war. So those kids, they were protesting the fact they were losing their friends. And secondly, there was no coordination. There was certainly obviously no internet at that time, you know. So it was a very organic thing. They were pissed off. They were mad. And history is, because we didn't accomplish anything, history's basically come down on their side. The whole thing was, it was pointless. We lost 55,000 people. We didn't even win a war. You know, and we could have won, but the idea is, no, you can't fight too hard. I mean, this was the start of what Dwight Eisenhower warned us as the military-industrial complex. It was the start of the forever wars. I mean, I suppose you could go back to Korea, because technically the Korean War has never been resolved. It's still ongoing, which is the reason when Trump stepped over that line in North Vietnam, North Korea, that was a big thing. That was a big deal. That's the reason. So, I mean, a lot of people will point to that, and I suppose you could. But Vietnam, if it wasn't the first, it certainly cemented it. And you stop and think about this. You know, so I was just going through a tape of a recording of one of our previous shows. I got a call, a guy named Cooper called up, and he's talking about, I was talking about the fact that Laura Eisenhower, Dwight Eisenhower's granddaughter, she says, and I know I'm mixing stuff here, but one of the reasons I pay so much attention to the UFO stuff, when it comes to the government, it's a real harbinger of how the government treats other things. I mean, the government has been covering this up for 70 years, and you think, how can they cover it up so successfully? Well, first of all, they aren't. It's an open secret. Everybody knows, you know. I mean, I was watching George Knapp, the reporter from KLAS on Las Vegas, on Joe Rogan, and this was about 2 years ago, but I was happy, and I've been to watch this afternoon, where Knapp says, once he started looking into this, he said it was plainly obvious. He said he talked to dozens of people who said they had some connection with Area 51 and knew about the crashed spacecraft. Dozens. Now, even if some of them are making it up, it's too many people, you know. And then you got Bob Lazar, and he said what I've always said too. He said the government will tell you Bob Lazar's story doesn't check out, but he said he checked it out, you know, where Lazar went to school. I think it was Cal Poly and MIT, if I'm right. That's what Lazar says. If you call those institutions, they have no record of him being there, and that's because somebody at the CIA called somebody in the office there, the registration office, said, look, if you expunge these records, we'll give you $10,000. I'm sure something like that happened. You know, and suddenly they're gone. You know, but George Knapp says He talked to oodles of people that went to school with Lazar, those places, who said they saw him on campus, you know, in class with him. I mean, he all sorts of things. Then there's the other thing about the fact that the government also said Lazar did not work at Los Alamos. And Knapp said he went to Los Alamos with Bob Lazar, and it was plainly obvious that everybody on campus knew him. He said he got a tour of the Lazar gave him a tour of the facility. He obviously knew where everything was. You know, he said the people were waving at him, stopping and talking to him. He said it was plainly obvious he worked in this place. He said, you just can't fake that. So why did I bring all that up? I brought all that up because, like I said, it's the same thing the government does about everything else. They just lie through their freaking teeth. So, all right, now I got to remember my point. At some point, I think Christy Noem has to take me out in the back shed and shoot me. I think I'm just another dog that needs to be put down. At any rate, we were talking about the fact that these protesters, this is not generically driven, and what happened in 60 years ago in Vietnam was. It was, I said it wasn't, you know, it was organic. Conaway said it wasn't generic. I said, we're talking about the same thing. And he said, yeah, we are. Just different words. That's all it was. Now, it turns out, like I said, that the Wall Street Journal and also the NYPD has said this, that this is not only not driven by the students themselves, about half of the people in all these protests are not students. And they have no connection with the university. Now, a few of them are teachers, faculty members. That's true. So I'm not saying they aren't students. I'm saying they have no connection with the universities involved. That about half of them. So this is being coordinated by somewhere. It's according to the Wall Street Journal, other sources have been writing about this, the New York Post, et cetera. It's mostly all this, they're coming from nonprofit and not NGOs that are being given money by Soros, Gates, and the usual lefty crowd. You know, I would love to interview George Soros. I would, and I would do it because I don't understand what drives this guy. I don't understand it. First of all, he's one of the richest men on the planet. Secondly, he made his money with a system for investing that people say shouldn't work. Now, my accountant has told me that she thinks Soros's claim to riches, or not that he doesn't have the money, but how he got it is actually fraudulent. She thinks he stole this money somehow. And no one ever knows, although it's a lot of money to steal. I mean, the guy's a billionaire, you know. But, I mean, that's what she said. She's one of the many people. He's put out two or three books on his investing philosophy and strategy, and people say this shouldn't work. I don't know enough about finance to say either way. I haven't read any of these books. But there's a lot of people say what he did should not have worked. So he has a shitload of money. And then if you made your money under a capitalist system, why would you want to destroy the capitalist system? That's the part I don't get. It's like, well, I made my money. Now I'm going to make certain nobody else makes anymore. I don't get that. And, you know, you're talking about Jeffrey Epstein. Now, this, you know, Jeffrey Epstein supposedly made his money as an investor. It's not just his methods aren't necessarily in question. What's been questioned is even whether he actually even did. No one's ever been able to trace any transactions he ever made on the stock market. No one. And apparently, there are journalists who have tried. They always run into dead ends. There's no actual evidence that Jeffrey Epstein ever invested any money with anyone or anything, which makes a lot of people think that he was a government or a CIA plant. And I think there's a lot of, okay, I'm going off on a conspiracy theory, but the thing is, this makes a lot of sense. You can't find out where he got the money. And people have tried. I mean, I have not tried. But I mean, I'm in touch with journalists all the time. No one has been able to figure this out. No one has been able to figure out where the hell he got his money. And the guy was filthy wealthy. I mean, it wasn't just the fact that he had all these private planes and these residents and stuff. The guy was, he obviously had no need for money whatsoever other than what he already had. No, absolutely none. He could do whatever he wanted. And then the theory is, well, he was set up by the CIA, and the modus operandi, or the justification, the rationale is that he would find all these famous people or these other wealthy individuals, and he would lure them with the promise of sex. And a lot of time it's illicit underage sex. And once he supplied that sex for them, he either by recording or, you know, cameras or whatever, he basically would blackmail them. He said, well, you know, here's the deal. You know, I have proof that you did this. And if you don't do what I ask, I'm going to tell the world. And a lot of these people are very, very important. And they buckle under. And no one, and there's no evidence that anybody, if this happened, and that's the thing, and in some ways this is proof maybe that it didn't. If this happened, no one's ever tried to buck this system. No one ever tried to actually call him out, as far as anybody knows anyway. But it's still very mysterious. I mean, you got a guy who is supposedly extremely wealthy, and nobody can trace the money. You know, all the whole thing has always been to follow the money. And usually 99.9% of the time, you follow the money, you come up with the answer. And Jeffrey Epstein's case, for whatever reason, it hasn't worked. So, and I bring that up the same with Soros. But like I said, Soros has actually published books on his investing methods, on his strategy. So I don't know. You know, Epstein never told anybody. But Soros has supposedly been very public about it, how what he did to, he's even got a name for his system and all this sort of stuff. But there's a lot of people in the finance industry who said what he did should not have worked. So I don't know. But even if that's all legit, and like I said, because of his own transparency, there's a good possibility it probably is. Why would you want to stop a system that made you a shitload of money? You know, this is the thing. People say that, you know, all of these stupid fucking kids and their decolonization stuff and imperialist, you know, and you know, the fact that capitalism's evil. Capitalism has brought more people out of poverty than any other system that's ever existed on the planet. Now, it's highly flawed. I admit it, it is. Capitalism has some huge problems. It really does. But it's still better than all the other systems. That's the thing. They're all, the other ones are more flawed. So maybe it's just a matter of, we got this. Capitalism is the only single economic system anyone's come up with that actually creates money, where actually all boats rise. Everybody gets richer. It's the only one. And for all the others, it's either I get richer, you get poorer, or we all get poorer. That's communism. You know, it's like, I mean, Karl Marx is a hilarious individual. The fact that he sold people on the system, and the thing is, it's inherently flawed from the get-go. The axioms at the very beginning are actually, the whole thing's founded on, are wrong. You know, and that's, if you've ever noticed this with the left, this is one of their tactics they use. They will set up, they'll set up justifications to start something, you know, to make an argument, but the actual justifications are incorrect. So the whole thing's flawed from that point forward, but because that's the first thing they mention, and they don't mention it again, they just take it as an assumption. It never comes up for questioning. But Marx failed on two simple things. It's the law of possession, the fact that people actually, humans like to own stuff. And you know, babies even know which pacifier belongs to them. People like to own stuff, and incentive, the law of incentive, and that is, if I do more work, I should get more money. There, you know, this is a, you know, it's two things that they're wired into the human psyche, and communism wants you to ignore those things, and that's the reason it doesn't work. Also, communism does not take into account of greed, and greed is a human, is a human construct. But capitalism at least can channel it. I mean, yeah, greed is still bad, but you can channel, in capitalism, you can channel greed sometimes to positive ends. Whereas in communism, it's just doesn't work. Greed raises its ugly head. That means somebody stole something from somebody. Where in capitalism, that's not necessarily true, although sometimes it is. Yeah. So these kids are on these campuses. They don't even know what they're protesting. And getting back to the thing about Vietnam, about the comparison, like I said, it was in 1960s, it was the friends of our own kids, my friend's friends were getting killed. And that brought the whole thing home. Here, you have a bunch of kids, hundreds if not thousands of them all over the country, who are trying to affect something they have no real direct effect or consequence with at all. They think, because we set up a camp at Columbia that somehow Israel is going to bow out of the war. I mean, it's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. And then Hamas comes and says, they encourage it. They actually send a message to the kids here in the United States. Oh, keep on doing this. We really appreciate it. Yeah, it doesn't have any effect, But thank you for your support. Oh, Jesus. God Almighty. There's an article in Hot Air about the Hamas fangirls, how they're hurting the feminist cause. And I said this on the show for the last 2-3 months. The funniest single thing you can come up with here is queers for Palestine. It's like, yeah, you go over it. You try being queer in Palestine. You go try that. Like, you're nuts. I mean, you're nuts. And the amazing thing is, Israel is possibly the most pro-gay rights country in the world, even more so than the United States. I mean, if you want to be free and gay anywhere, you go to Tel Aviv. That's the hilarious part here. But if you want to be a queer for Palestine, you go to Palestine, and they'll throw you off the building. You know, and not to mention the fact that, and this is what this article is about the fact that if just being a woman in Palestine, in Hamas ruled Palestine, so here's what you can't do. You can't drive. You can't go to school. You can't show your face. If you take your burqa off, you're going to get stoned. It's hilarious. You cannot come up with more comedy than this. You can't. This is unbelievable. And these kids are supporting this. It's just hilarious. I mean, they're morons. And the thing that I said, that we said this last week, we're talking about the month in review panel. It's like, and all three of us guys, everyone on the panel is over 60, right? Okay, we're all old farts, right? And here's my take on this, and everybody agreed. We were stupid. When I was 15, 18 years old, I was a stupid son of a bitch. And I admit it, totally. But I wasn't as stupid as these kids. They have taken stupid to a whole other level. I mean, that's the thing I don't understand. No, we wouldn't have done that crap, the crap that's going on right now. No. I'm not going to support anybody, a country that throws people off of buildings. I'm not going to. No, I'm out of that. So, if you ask me, and I'd be interested in other people's take on this, but not William Ayers, because William Ayers is a communist too. It's not so much that the kids in the 1960s were against Soviet-style communism, although I think most of them were. But that wasn't the point. The point is that we were fighting a war and we weren't winning, and we ended up not winning. And you look back on this thing with Eisenhower, I never finished this thought here. You know, about the fact that January 1961, 2 weeks before Kennedy was inaugurated, which I consider the start of the quote-unquote modern era, Eisenhower, got up and gave the speech on television where he said that the American public has to beware of the military-industrial complex, a term he coined. And he's a five-star general, the only five-star general that America's ever had up to that point, the only one. And he's talking badly about the military. And you stop and think about this. You've got the single most decorated person in U.S. military history who's now the president. He was the only president up to that time, the only two people who have never held previous political office on any level are Dwight Eisenhower and about Donald Trump. And of course, but Dwight was, you know, in the military. So he was the highest ranking military person in the U.S. military when he became president. So in some ways, he still is part of the government. But he's dissing the military that brought him up. It's unbelievable. And you think, well, Jesus, he must know something. Yeah, no shit. And then Lyndon Johnson, you know, takes over after Kennedy is killed. And he doesn't run. Let's get this really straight. He ran. The law was already in place then. It was in place, I think, in 1947 that said the president could either, he was confined to 2 terms and or 10 years. In other words, if you were the vice president and you stepped in for less than half of your president's term, you could still run for two terms. If it was more than half of the term, you'd only run for one. So LBJ came in at with 1 year left on Kennedy's tenure, so he was eligible to run for 2 terms. So he was the president for the last year of Kennedy's term. Then he ran for election against Barry Goldwater and he won. And then he did his 4 years, and then he was eligible to run again, and he declined. And I remember, I was a little kid. I was like 12, 13 years old. I remember seeing the speech live on television. I watched it, where he said, I will not seek and I will not accept the nomination as your president of the United States. I still remember that. And the thing is, there's nobody really knows this for sure, but the evidence seems to indicate that he got completely burned by the quote-unquote military-industrial complex, that he had basically lost control of the military, you know. And that was, you know, there's people who say that would have happened to JFK, except JFK behind the scenes was such a stick-in-the-mud pain in the ass, he was going to let it happen. And that's, you know, there's some people think that's the reason he got killed. Johnson completely lost control of the situation, and he basically threw his hands up and went back to his ranch, you know. And the weird thing is, I mean, post-presidency, LBJ was never really the same person. He gave a few speeches afterwards, you know, stuff like that, but there's people who, and you know, he had a working ranch, and he literally went back to being a rancher. He had nothing to do with politics at all after that, other than, like I said, an occasional speech here and there. Other than that, he went back to me, and people worked with him on the ranch said he wasn't himself after that. He just like, he kind of walked around in a daze. He died shortly after. I can't remember how much later. Was it 73? He left office in 69. I think something like that. Anyway, it's like the whole experience burned him badly. And the amazing thing is, people who knew him, He was big man on campus in the Senate before he became like vice president. I mean, there's apocryphal stories, which apparently are true, that when and I'm not making this up. I'm not saying this for comedic effect. But apparently, this is actually real. That when LBJ wanted to show his dominance in a Senate meeting, he would actually whip out his penis because it was so large. And he'd show everybody. It's literally, I have the biggest cock in the room. Literally, that's what he was trying to show. And apparently he actually did. So, you know, I'm laughing because this is kind of funny. But the thing is, supposedly this is real. I mean, he was balls to the wall. He was the guy. And being president apparently completely decimated him personally. You know, then after that, you got Richard Nixon. Nixon ran for president in 60 and 68. He beat Hubert Humphrey, but it was a very close election. Now, the 1960 election with Kennedy was still to this day one of the closest elections ever, both in terms of the electoral count and the actual vote count. Kennedy won both, but by the slimmest of margins. And there's been the contention, which apparently is really true, that Kennedy won because his father had paid people to cheat in Cook County in Chicago, And that turned Illinois, and that turned the whole election. In other words, by changing the vote in one county, they actually changed the electoral count so that he won. I know that if you know anything about how elections actually work, how the electoral count, it's not that hard to believe that. You know, I mean, Jeff Meyer and I have talked about this many times about the fact that, and Tim Conaway is an election judge here in Minnesota. I know he strongly disagrees with me on this. I do think I am an election denier. I think the 2020 election, I think there was cheating going on. I'm not here in Minnesota. Matter of fact, if anything, I would have to say it was in Arizona. I think the Maricopa County election system might be the most corrupt in the entire United States. Now, Bill O'Reilly says, no, the one in Philadelphia is, well, that Philadelphia is completely corrupt. He says, no Republicans ever going to win in Philadelphia ever because of that reason. Why did I bring that up? Oh, I was trying to make a point about the fact that if the elections, it'd be relatively easy to cheat a federal election if the election is close. If it isn't close, it can't be done. Now, you know, I'm sitting here bashing Democrats and liberals, but let me say some bad things about the Republicans now. There's a lot of evidence to indicate that the Republicans cheated the 2000 and 2004 elections. And they did it by literally manipulating computer data. If you're talking about the Democrats in 2020, if there was cheating at all, it probably didn't have anything to do with the computer systems. They were probably flooding the systems with bogus mail-in ballots. If they did it, that's probably how they did it. In 2000, 2004, supposedly the Republicans actually hacked the computer systems. That's supposedly what they did. They had a mastermind computer guy that succeeded in doing it. That's the contention. There's a good amount of evidence to indicate that happened. And also when the Congress decided to do a investigation on it, the first person they called was that computer guy. And the day before he was supposed to testify, he died in a helicopter accident. Coincidence? I don't know. You know, what is the name of the Richard Belcher, right? The comedian. You know, he was a big, huge conspiracy theorist on the JFK assassination, and he figured out that there was about in the moment Kennedy got shot in Dealey Plaza in Dallas, there were about 300 people in the plaza who were, if not all witnesses, they were potential witnesses of this. And in the course of 5 years after that, 78 people of those 300 people died, many of them in mysterious circumstances. And so that is almost exactly one quarter of them. But Belcher hired a mathematician, and they figured out that is 16 trillion times more what the background would be from the deaths of 300 random people pulled out of the populace. It's 16 trillion times more. Now, you know, and people say, well, how did they figure that out? Well, the thing is, in his book, I think the book is called The Hitmen, if I'm right, Belcher actually published the formula they used to figure that out. They were transparent about it. They published it. I mean, he's gone. This is the reason he said this was not chance. Some of these people died very mysteriously. So you got this guy. He's the star witness of the supposed cheating in 2004, and he gets killed the day before he's supposed to testify. Well, you know, it's just chance. You know, it just happens to people. Oh man, I'm starting to wonder. I was talking about this whole thing about Michelle Obama actually coming in the last minute and running and being the Democratic nominee. I'm actually starting if the Democrats actually want Biden to lose. And I'm not even talking about the nomination. I'm even talking about the presidency. I know there's something that I'm starting to wonder if they've come to the conclusion that they should just cut their losses and get out admit defeat to this battle and regroup and get together and win the war. That's why I wonder if they're thinking of the way they're thinking about this. they seem to be very much better at thinking ahead than the Republicans do. I'm astonished. For a bunch of people who say they're the rational ones, and usually are. I mean, I'm a former liberal, and the reason I became a conservative, two things. Well, they're related. First of all, I started to study Mac. Come to the conclusion, as many people who study macroeconomics do, you can't study it without coming to the conclusion at some point that liberal fiscal policy simply doesn't work. It does not work. That's all there's to it. And they prove it over and over again. And the amazing thing is, and this is what's going on right now, there's such ideologues that they don't. They cannot wrap their mind around the fact that what they're doing is failing. It's always somebody else's fault. Or there's always another reason. You know, it's like my friends always say, well, you know, it's socialism actually works. It's just nobody's ever done it right. That's the constant thing you hear over and over again. No, they're wrong. Socialism doesn't work. That's the reason it hasn't worked. So it doesn't work, you know. But no, it's like, no, we can do this. If we do this right, we can make this work. No, you can't. No. And the second reason is very tied to that. So what is the second reason, Jim? Let me see if I can remember. The second reason is that. Okay, we got one reason. That's good enough. But I was talking about the rationality of the Republicans. The second reason is related to the first. The second reason is that the Republicans, we seem to be good when we actually follow through, which is hardly ever. The Republicans seem to be really good at actually making things work, you know? I mean, why are people nostalgic for the Trump era? Because Trump, the government under Trump largely worked. It's as simple as that. This is the hilarious part. He's Hitler. You know, he's going to be a dictator. He's going to end democracy as we all know it. Blah, 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 blah. Now, this stuff worked 20 years ago. What also worked is that 20 years ago, because of George Floyd, which gave the leftist Marxists and anarchists a perfect reason to basically start this whole era of rioting, and, mostly peaceful process, remember that, all that sort of shit. You know, and Jeff Meyer just reminded me of this the other day. He said, because when I did podcasts and radio shows for Calling News, I was saying, and I've said this, you know, in 2020, okay, so George Floyd died on a Monday afternoon. And everyone was asking me, what do you think is going to happen? I said, well, on Wednesday, there's going to be a giant riot. Well, why not Tuesday? Because it's going to take Antifa 24 hours to get here. That's why. I was right. The riot wasn't on Tuesday. It started on Wednesday. So they've sold the public. At that point, it's like, oh, what's going on? What's going on? Now they're trying the exact same thing again. I mean, it's the same playbook. Only problem. Trump was president already, and he was more or less successful. You know, I mean, I have a lot of Republican friends who are Trump haters. They, you know, a lot of them will candidly and regrettably admit that he did a pretty good job, at least at some things. But no, the Trump era, the Trump presidency was largely successful. And so now they're starting this whole thing over, you know. Nobody, you understand, nobody's being held accountable. All these kids they get arrested, they do get released, you know, like in a day, you know, shit, same thing's going to happen. Except the thing is, at the Democratic Convention in Chicago in August, this is probably going to come back to completely bite them in the ass. I mean, a lot of people, and I'm one of them, I think the riots in Chicago this year will be even worse than they were in 1968. And those were bad, you know, and I think this could lose the Democrats the presidency. This is a reason why I don't think it matters at this point who they switch Joe Biden out for. I really don't. If Michelle Obama is the nominee, God bless her. She's going to have to deal with that crap. The public's getting really, really tired of this shit. I also think there's a whole bunch of Democrats who are telling pollsters they're supporting Biden, but will go in the voting booth and actually vote for Trump. I think that too. I think it's going to be, I think his win, he, not only is he going to win, but something else happens. I reserve the right to change my mind. But right now, I think it's going to be more of a shellacking than people than it looks like it's going to be. I really do. Which is what happened in 2016. That was a shellacking. But Hillary Clinton was widely, widely expected to win. I mean, Huffington Post said that she had a 98% chance of winning. And people forget about this. 538, Nate Silver's website, you know, that these will, they deal with hardcore facts and figures. You people say, well, they predicted that Hillary was going to win too. Actually, technically, they didn't. But they didn't change their prediction until the night before the election. And if you go through their weekly predictions, their support for Hillary went down and down and down until the night before the election on Monday. On that Monday, it actually switched over to Trump. So, yeah, they actually did end up predicting Trump was going to win. But hardly anybody else did, you know. And the other thing that's brought up to me, too, and you know, me being an election denier, and this is the part where I have to give like some props to Conaway, where I might be wrong. I know it may surprise you, the shit out of you people, but, yeah, sometimes I'm actually wrong. And that is, in 2020, with one single exception, Trump was never ahead on any poll anywhere. State polls, national polls, didn't matter. There's one single exception. I can't remember what it was, where he was ahead of Biden like in one day or something like that. So for all practical purposes, never. He was never leading in any of the polls. The problem is by that point, people had given up on the polls. The polls in 2016 were so unbelievably wrong. Everybody thought this system was completely faulty, and for a while it actually was. Part of the problem was that they had to start collecting data a completely different way, because most of the data collected for polls up to that time was done via landline telephones, and now no one in America has one anymore. So the pool of people they were calling was getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and they were having a harder time expanding it. And at the same token, the people that actually probably vote weren't on landline telephone calls. And there's some, I don't know if they know, they have a way of getting around it now. I don't know if they do. But at that time, anyway, you could not call someone. It was against the law to make a phone call randomly to a cell phone number. I don't know if that's true anymore, but it was then. So that was part of the problem. They couldn't come up with any good data. So 2020 rolls around. And everyone thinks no one's following the polls. Everyone thinks the polls are bullshit. But the fact is that Trump never led at any point in the polling process the entire campaign ever. You know, now I've countered that with the fact that Joe Biden, while he still has this problem, he's never not had this problem. No one comes out to see him. You know, with only one exception, the entire 2020 campaign, he never drew more than 200 people to any campaign event. And usually it was less than 100. I mean, I'm actually being generous. 200 covers everybody. Meanwhile, Trump was drawing an average of 20,000 people every campaign event. Now, in 2016, he was drawing 10,000 to 20,000 people. Hillary's drawing about 1,500 people. The state will still weigh less, but it's within the acceptable range. She was getting about 1,500 people on average for campaign events. So a little less, a little more, you know. She lost that election because she lost it. It's not that Trump won it. She ran an incompetent campaign. And then you wonder, oh, she wants to be president. And I've always said this. If you can't run your freaking campaign, you can't run the country. What the hell? You know? And she couldn't. She couldn't run a campaign. And her husband sit on the sidelines. This is all apocryphal, too, but apparently people said this is really true. And he's pointing and laughing at her because of the incompetence of that. No, he told her all sorts of stuff. You're doing this wrong. No. We're not doing it wrong. Trust us. I have to tell you, folks, every single time in my entire career, I've had somebody say, trust us. We know what we're doing. They didn't. No exceptions. Every single time I've heard that, those people didn't know what they were doing. I'm going to go on to part three here. We already did the Kong thing. I did it up front because the Kong commercial, because I want to talk about the thing that was on the Kong front page there. I got a part, part three is a part of the show where we talk about paranormal news, scientist news, that sort of thing. And I have this is kind of straddles the line between real news and the part three news. So I kind of put this at the in between, and it's an article, a headline on Hot Air called Unscientific American. It's about the fact that Scientific American, their circulation has hit the floor because they're basically, they've become woke. They're not writing science articles anymore. Now they're writing DEI articles and articles to talk about inclusion in science and all that sort of crap. So there was a poll done this weekend, and John Nolte wrote about this in Breitbart, about the fact that the Disney company has completely lost their audience. This is not based, obviously it's based on their sales. Their sales have absolutely cratered. I mean, I think they lost like $700 billion last year. I mean, just some ungodly amount. They basically haven't had a hit movie in ages. And they spend a lot of money on these movies. Those Star Wars movies are not cheap. But this was about the fact that, the poll was about the fact that they asked the public if they still believed in the Disney brand. I can't remember the exact wording of the question, but 71% said no. 71% of the American public. Now, the last time they did this poll was 10 or 15 years ago, and then just under half of people said no. But that's still a pretty bad number. You know, if your public corporation is selling to the public, you want to come in at 75% yes, you do. Because, yeah, there's always a certain number of people that aren't going to like what you're doing. That's for sure. But 71% of the public said they no longer trust the Disney brand. 71%. That's fucking unbelievable. Well, you just killed your company. That's great. You know, Walt Disney's rolling over in his grave. You know that. He's the guy who created Fantasia. You know, now if you did Fantasia, well, you couldn't have Snow White because she's too white. I don't know. So I brought the thing about Scientific American because it kind of straddles the two things here. But now going on to the actual part three. This is a headline on The Debrief. I was telling you about Mika Hanks, his organization, his news organization. The headline is, James Webb Space Telescope maps weather on planet 280 light years away from Earth. And this is actually true. They are now predicting the weather on a planet 280 light years away. Now, the real funny part about this, and I'm not kidding, this is really, this is an actual thing in my craw that's been for a long time. We have only managed to predict the weather reasonably well out here on Earth in the last 20 years. I worked with a, God bless his soul, he's not with us anymore now, a writer named Tom Mitzel, who was constantly talking about the fact that he was constantly bitching about the weather people on television. He said, why don't we just do it by people get signed up for jury duty, your name gets drawn in by random, and you go down to the TV station and you read the news for a week. Because he said nobody knows it, and he's right. This is like 2000. This is like 20, 25 years ago. Nobody knew anything about the weather. The weather prediction sucked. It was awful. They were guessing, you know? And this he was constantly bitching about this, but the thing is, he was right. The forecasts were not at all accurate, ever. You know, they were guessing. Now we actually do have some hard data. Now they can predict the weather pretty reasonably well for at least 4 or 5 days out anyway. You know, so now that we nailed that on Earth, we're now predicting the weather on other planets. That's great. Yeah, I'm sure the extraterrestrials appreciate that. You and your little primitive little computers there. You know, so yeah, thanks for the heads up. Okay, so there's that. And then there's... this is kind of a weird story. about the fact that on the International Space Station, so you're in freaking space, okay? You're in space. There's bacteria growing up there. They don't know how it got there. It's like, what? All right, so the theory is all these humans come and go at the ISS, right? So, and of course, human bodies are filled with bacteria. You know, there's no, it doesn't matter how, you can wash yourself off, doesn't matter, you know. And they think that, that some of the slough off of the humans up there is, and the fact that they're in space and where there's no gravity is somehow creating weird strains of bacteria. And now they're concerned about, believe it or not, they're concerned about bringing these strains back to Earth. Not that the, everyone on Earth is going to die, but they, it could cause some considerable sickness, you know. The theory, as best as I can figure this out, the theory that the astronauts are not getting sick is because they're up there, they're used to it, it's a closed environment. So they build up an immunity to this. But supposedly some of this bacteria is not that friendly. And now they're concerned about, you know, the other direction. They're concerned about these astronauts getting in the return pods with the bacteria coming back down to Earth. They open it, and then there you go. Now you got bacteria from space. It's great. That's a fantastic thing, isn't it? Oh, man. Oh, hold it. We got a call. Hey, is this Think?
Yes. Hi.
I recognize your phone number now. How are you?
Great. How's it going?
Hey,
I wanted to jump in here. I know I'm a little late on this, but I wanted to jump on here about that whole Trump thing that you were talking about, how he barely won the elections. But when he ran against Hillary, I personally never cared about who ran. I listened to Alex Jones. You know who Alex Jones is, right?
Of course
I'm pretty
I do.
Sure
yeah.
You know who. Yeah.
Right.
So I listened to Alex Jones for a long time now. One of the things that Alex Jones always said is that the right and the left are the same thing. They both go
right.
to cross and bones, and they're the same party. I do contract work, so I travel around to different locations. And the further this was during the 2000s, early 2000s.
Uh-huh.
I was starting to go to places, and they had Alex Jones playing in the background. This was when Alex Jones was still on the radio. He didn't have a TV show. I remember
right.
he didn't even want money. Alex Jones didn't even want money. One day a caller told Alex Jones, why don't you just make a fundraiser? I want to support you. And then Alex Jones says, you know, I thought about it, but then he did it one day. Alex Jones said, you know, I'm going to do a fundraiser. And he made over $1 million. People
yeah.
just sent him money. Out of nowhere.
This should be, we should point this out here. You're not alone. Alex Jones's audience, even though he's no longer on the radio, is way, way bigger than most people would expect. I mean, he has a serious viewership online. He really does.
That's right.
Anyway, go ahead.
That's right. Yep. You're right. And he was on, I think, I forgot the name of his radio show. He's on the same radio show as, Coast to Coast, you know,
uh-huh.
that the same
right.
show, the same station. So it's not a major radio station, but his viewership, his listeners were through the roof, right? Through the roof.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
when he made that $1 million, well, when he started making all this money, the first thing he started doing was investing it into an actual television show on YouTube. He
yeah.
had like a studio. Anyway, one day, Alex Jones says, I'm going to support Trump. Now, throughout the whole time period that I listened to Alex Jones, he always said that the left and right, Democrats and Republicans, it doesn't matter. They're the same thing. They both go to the same club.
The thing, I got two questions for you. First of all, are you talking about 2016 or 2020?
2016, the first one. The first election.
Okay.
All
right. I want to point out my personal feeling here. I generally agree with you. When I talk about differences
okay.
between the parties, I think they're relatively minor. I think there are slightly different ways that people think on both sides, but relatively speaking, I agree with you. They're basically the same. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. I have a different way of thinking with you, and I'm okay with that. And I like the way you think. I like
Thank
that,
you.
Like, yeah. I like the way you think. It's opposite of me, because if I don't hear people like you, I start going crazy, because I have a way different type of belief, and people like you, Jim, keep me grounded. Anyway, and I'm going to speak out by my point of view. So Alex yeah. Jones says, I'm going to support Trump out of nowhere. I'm telling you, Alex Jones has never, ever supported any president party, anybody. He has never said, I like Clinton, I like Obama. He made a whole movie called The Obama Deception, talking about how bad Obama would be for our country. And I really agreed with it. I strongly yeah. believe that that Obama was sent there, was used as a puppet. I mean, I believe all these presidents are puppets. And the time period needed a black president for that party to be elected.
Hey, so I got to hold it. Think, I want to start. I want to ask you something. So
sure.
I can buy the fact that all presidents are puppets, but do you think they know that when they're actually running? Sometimes I think most of these guys, they think they're running, and then they get into office, and they suddenly realize they're a puppet. Do you think that's what it is? Do you think they know ahead of time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I never thought about that. Huh. I really never thought. I would think, I mean, this is just me speaking right now. For the first time ever, I'm hearing this question. I would think that they would know in advance that that they can only do so much. That I guess when you're political like that, you kind of expect that you could only do so much, that other people are going to have to do a lot of the work for you, and you kind of overlook it. But I think once you become president and then you're overwhelmed with like the CIA, the FBI, the different levels of branches coming right. to you and then basically putting you in your place, I think that's when you do realize you really don't have control here. It's all these people yeah. controlling you. You saw what they did to Trump. I mean, how they kept impeaching him and all that.
Right.
I would say that when these people are running for president, they don't expect it. But when they do become president, they start to realize, hey, I am a puppet. I am being yeah. controlled. And I think what made Trump different was he didn't want that. He saw that he was going to be a puppet, and he fought back. And I would say. But back to the Alex Jones thing, I think personally that it was what got Trump elected was Alex Jones endorsing him. I strongly believe that Alex Jones saying that, hey, we should vote for Trump, that's where the through the roof people started voting for Trump. And I strongly believe that's what it was. It was just Alex Jones.
I don't think that's the least bit implausible. I don't. Because, I mean, I do know, like I said, I know that Jones's audience is, to this day, it's way bigger than anybody realizes. I know that because I follow the media very closely. And I'm sure he probably, by endorsing in 2016, it might have made the difference between Trump winning and losing. So I could totally buy that completely.
Yeah, yeah. So the first person that I saw that the media – took down was Alex Jones. He was the first person ever, because when Trump got elected, I think the other side knew, was trying to figure out how the hell did this guy get win? We had Hillary Clinton. She's in the footprints of a really good president. Clinton was considered a good president. That's what people say. And she's in the footprints of him. And also, she's his wife, so she should have won. But how the hell did Trump win? And I would say that Alex Jones did was the main reason why. And then they figured that out. And so the first person they took down was Alex Jones. He
got
censored.
They did too.
I've never seen anyone censored like that. They censored him on YouTube. Go ahead.
I agree. I haven't either. They really, really stuck it to this guy. And all he's ever done is talk. His entire life's been ruined just for talking. I mean, it's like unbelievable. He didn't shoot anybody. He didn't lead any, insurrection. No, he just talks. And it's like, holy shit. You know, even this thing with Sandy Hook, you know. And I don't know if he admitted to wrongdoing just to get the thing over with. I don't know. But still, the fact of the matter is, the guy is his opinion may be wacky, but still, he has the right to have his opinion. He just does.
That's right. And I agree with you on that 100%. I think that we all have a right to, this is America. If we were living in Russia, I would say something different. Or if we were living in China, I would say something different. But this is America. I would think that if you're a citizen of this country or if you're a resident within this, you should have the right to say whatever you want on any platform. And
yes.
So for Alex Jones to say, I'm telling you, I was on some blog talk radio shows where people are like, at the time, I think it was like 2015, there was this huge tornado in Oklahoma. And I was on a blog talk radio show, and they said that HAARP was doing it, that HAARP was the main culprit causing. So the United States was using these machines to cause tornadoes as a test. And so they were causing tornadoes in Oklahoma. 9/11 was an inside job, all these type of like weird conspiracy theories. And I listened to all of them. Do I believe everyone? No. But I think that we should be allowed to say stuff like that.
So do I. It's completely.
That's right. And I mean,
totally
even
agree
the movie. That's right. Even the movie documentaries that we see on TV, the documentaries and stuff, they're opinionated as well. You know,
right.
There's this one called Saving. I forgot what it's called, but it's about R. Kelly. I forgot. Do you know who R. Kelly is? The singer?
Yes, I do. And I know about what's going on with him, but I don't really follow it.
Yeah, it's a pretty big documentary about him, and it was one-sided. It said that he was a pedophile. He had women locked up in his basement and all types. Basically, when that movie came out, he got arrested, like not too long afterwards. And it was on a broadcast television, and I was surprised that they could do something like that. How can a television network make a documentary about someone like just destroying them like that, just literally saying all this negative stuff about him, calling him a pedophile and everything, and then they got him arrested? And then I saw Alex Jones. I'm like, you know, they did it to him too. But Alex Jones, all he does is, like you say, it's just his theories, his opinion. It's entertainment. I mean,
right.
So that's why
right now we have people who are saying that you shouldn't be able to say certain things because it's quote unquote unsafe. And that's bullshit. Now, it's already illegal to threaten somebody's life. You can't threaten people with violence. That's not for free speech under the law. But other than that, it's that you should be able to say anything you want, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I hear blog talk radio shows. There are some like black nationalist shows that talk so bad about the white community. I hear the Indian shows on blog talk radio talk bad about the white community as well, or the black community. And then I do hear white nationalist blog talk radio shows talking bad about the other races. And to me, I find it all bad, but I'm glad that there's a voice for these people to be heard either way. I don't think there's a danger in just expressing your mind. There's a danger when it becomes physical action. I would think that would be a danger. But to just speak out and you know, speak out your stereotypes of what you believe, all that type. I think it's how cultures adapt and learn to adjust to one another. That's how we learn to live with one another. We hear another person's point of view about us. And from that, we change or we become what they want us to be or however the narrative is set. Does that make sense? That's how we teach one another to live. That's how we live with one another. We talk. And even though it sounds like hatred, we need to hear this type of stuff. We do need to hear it. Yeah.
If someone's promoting a view that you find abhorrent, you want to hear that because you want to know who that person is to stay away from them.
That's another thing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's another thing. That's Yeah.
No, this whole thing about speech being quote unquote unsafe or dangerous, that's the real bullshit. That's crap. It's just complete utter crap.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much you listen to the show. I know you're calling regularly, and I really appreciate it because, you know, I appreciate you too, because you're always fascinating conversation. I almost have to apologize for my friends on the month review show when you called in, because we had gotten a bunch of trolls before then and they didn't know who you were. You know, I had to point out to them, no, you're a legit caller. You're legit, you know, because so. But once they got that, I think they got it, you know. But no, this is this whole thing with speech is like, it drives me nuts.
That's right.
This is the 115th episode we've done. We've already been flagged by YouTube 5 times for misinformation. That's absurd. It's just ridiculous. What's the misinformation? Oh, apparently we say climate change isn't real. Oh, yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, you do that. You just cut me off. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. And this is a modern, this is a new thing, right? Back in the days, you could say stuff like that. But now there's a level of control that's going on, and it's weird to me to be – I remember you saying that you were flagged and you were banned. I was banned on Facebook as well, and on, from comments I've been banned on YouTube. It's just weird that we're entering like a Orwellian is it considered Orwellian when you get banned from a social media platform?
I think it is.
Yeah, I would think so too. Yeah. So they end up fining Alex Jones $1 billion.
Yeah,
$1 billion. What the hell?
Well, especially because, he got fined $1 billion basically for hurting a bunch of people's feelings. That's the terrible thing. You know,
right.
I don't know if you should be fined that much money for hurting people's feelings, you know. Now, you know, all right, he said Sandy Hook wasn't real. I personally think that's nuts. But like I said, it doesn't matter what I think. He has the right to say it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now you often, I heard you talking about aliens. Now, what happens when they said that, you know, if you're talking about aliens, you're hurting the Christian community because they don't believe in aliens. They believe in God.
That's right.
Right? So, I mean, it cannot be like this unless this country is going in a direction that's not what it used to be. I mean, I don't think this we should be censoring social media platforms. I think it's a place for all of us to talk, and we should be allowed to talk. Mm-hmm.
I agree with you totally, and I think that people should be able, other than, like I said, threatening somebody's life directly, already illegal, other than that, I think people should be able to post anything they want. That's, you know, and people say, well, then it's a free-for-all. But, yeah, life is a free-for-all. Get used to it, you know?
Yeah. Now, to play devil's advocate and to maybe take the other side, social media, you do have a lot of followers. Maybe some people have a lot of followers, thousands, maybe even millions. And those people, if they were to post somebody's address, it might be dangerous, or call out somebody's name and get doxxed, you know? It might be dangerous in terms
I know.
Of that.
I got to admit, internally, I don't know what to do about that, because on the one hand, most, if not all, that information is actually public. So... You know, but by posting it all together in one place, there's obviously an intimidation factor there. And I don't, I totally agree with you. That's a gray area. I don't know how you handle that. I really don't.
Yeah. But in terms of somebody's opinion, I don't think we should censor an opinion. Oh, man, that's just a really, really bad thing right there to censor somebody's opinion.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. Yeah. And this is where our country's gotten. This is where we're at this point. It's just absolutely terrible. I don't know if we can bring it back or not. I really don't.
Oh,
the
man.
I'm interested in your opinion on this. So you said, you know, you think of the fact that Trump didn't put up with this thing about being a puppet. And I think that's true. Part of the reason he didn't is because he didn't have to, is because he's wildly rich. And that has something to do with that. But on the other hand, too, Yeah. All right. How do I put this? Oh, Jesus. Okay, you talk now. I lost my train of thought.
All right. All right. So on your show, I know that when I called in on your show when you had the panel, I know that they disagreed with me when I said that the whole COVID thing was to take down Trump. And this is why I believe stuff like that. And I'm going to start thinking like how you believe in climate change, because I believe climate change also leads to the Disney woke thing that you talk about as well.
Yeah.
So the when Trump pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Accords, it struck a nerve with all the countries. It made a lot of people mad because they were making so much money off of the whole climate thing. Yeah. And so Trump was like, I don't care whether it's there's a climate change or not. I don't want the United States people to be paying your taxes, to be paying these ridiculous taxes. And so he pulled the United States out of the climate accord. And here's the crazy thing that I think happened. I've never seen anything like this before. And that was Greta Thorne. I forget. Do you know who I'm talking about? That little girl?
Yeah, Greta Thunberg. Greta Thorne. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Thunberg. They let her get a Nobel Peace Prize for doing the speech where she damn near cries.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think a Nobel Peace Prize comes with $10 million now. I think it's up in
something
it's
like that.
Millions.
It's a fairly big award, right? Yeah. I don't know what the exact number is, but.
And so they gave a little girl, a 14-year-old girl, who cannot even debate an adult. An anti-climate, like a person like you, Jim, she couldn't debate you. 100% she wouldn't be able to debate you. But they gave her this Nobel Peace Prize that came with it. Now, at the same time, there were some kids at MIT that was developing this machine that turned human waste into fertile soil and drinkable water. They could have used that money to make that machine smaller and put these machines throughout the whole third world countries. But they didn't get a Nobel Peace Prize. They gave it to her.
Hold it. Did it occur to you that maybe they didn't get that because people don't want them distributing that that machine? Did that ever occur to you?
That could be too. That could be
I'm
too.
I'm a conspiracy theorist too, you know.
Okay.
There's something, the thing that I don't understand, I don't know if you caught this when I was talking about this earlier, I don't understand why George Soros is doing this shit, because here he got wildly rich off the capitalist system. Now he's turning around and basically shitting on it, you know? And I don't know what it is, but there's a certain type of personality here. It's not just, they don't want anybody to get rich except them. They don't want society to improve anywhere. And I don't know why this is. But this seems to be a personality trait among many of these people. I don't understand, but it does seem to be true.
Yeah. The whole George Soros thing, you have to understand George Soros, I strongly believe that he had a huge part in all the riots that were going on. There were videos of places before the riots where they had bricks laid out in the middle of the road.
We
can afford bricks being laid out in the middle of the road for people to pick these bricks up and just start throwing them at business. Why is it that it was done like that? It was everywhere like that. Each city that was had a riot, they planned this in advance. And George Soros was a big part of it. And I would say that he was – I don't know if he controlled the Democrat part of the Democrats or who controlled who, but he was definitely in with them, and they utilized his money to fund a lot of these riots that were going on.
Yeah, 100%, that's absolutely right. You're absolutely correct. In 2020, they were having pallets of bricks shipped to the middle of streets. They were literally being shipped there and dropped by forklifts, and the forklifts would withdraw. I mean, there's videos of this, plenty of them. You know, now I know, I can't remember, was it in Denver where they actually did trace the funding, or at least the person who was actually writing the checks to this, to the local Democratic Party? I think, I can't remember, I'm pulling this off my butt, so, but no, somebody's, It's the same thing that's going on with on college campuses. Somebody's funding this, you know. And the theory seems to be that we can remake society to our liking, but first we have to tear it down. That seems to be the theory. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense to me because I don't know how, you know, but that seems to be what they think. I don't know. What do you think?
I would say that that they're trying to control a narrative, and it's events like this that help shift a narrative to a specific side. I'm different with you in the fact that I do believe that there is an NGO controlling the whole system of governance,
yeah,
throughout all the country. And they need a specific events like this to be aired and to be shown to people so that they can shift the narrative to their point of view. That's
right.
How I don't know if I answered your question by
no,
saying
you
that.
Have totally, because I agree with you. That's what happened with George Floyd too. You know, the
right.
actual incident where George Floyd, now, you know, there's a woman here in Minneapolis, a reporter, who's made a documentary called The Fall of Minneapolis, and she contends, and there's a lot of people I've heard behind the scenes have said the same thing, that Derek Chauvin did not actually kill George Floyd. He actually died of natural causes on that spot. So, but the thing is that it was that type of, they were waiting for that type of incident to occur, and it literally just dropped in their laps. And the minute it did, they knew what to do. It's not that they, you know, they didn't necessarily plan that ignition per se, but they knew what to do once it happened. So I totally agree with you. I think that this is all being coordinated. And I think it appears that the modus operandi seems to be the destruction of society to rebuild the way they want. And they want to rebuild it as a Marxist system. There's no doubt about it.
That's right. And that's what I see. I mean, when the government can control what you say, I would say that we're leaning towards a Marxist society, communist, socialist, whatever you want to call it. But it's more a society where the government is more powerful than the people. And that's a dangerous thing because here in America, it shouldn't be like that. Here in America, from what I know, is that the people should be the driver, like, you know, Reagan says. The country is like a car. The people should be the driver. And the government is in the back seat, not the other way around. So,
right.
And it seems like it's headed that way. And I agree with the whole George. When I first saw that George Floyd video, I was like most people, like, man, that guy he's racist. He choked this guy. But after seeing the other videos that came out later, you could see that I heard that George Floyd swallowed a whole bunch of heroin.
Right.
These pills.
Supposedly he did.
To hide them from the police. Because when they caught him, he swallowed all these heroin pills or fentanyl pills or whatever so that the police didn't catch it. So when he said, I can't breathe, he couldn't breathe, but it wasn't because he was being choked. Well,
that's
could have been a little bit. But it was more his heart was beating too fast from all the drugs in his system.
Well, that's exactly supposedly what Liz Collins said. I've been trying to get Liz Collins on the show. She's very hard to get a hold of. And people keep asking me about her. But that's apparently what her research found out is exactly what you said, is that he swallowed a bunch of pills and it put his heart into overdrive, and he literally just had a heart attack and died. And had nothing to do with what Derek Chauvin was actually doing to him. So, but you know, of course, now you know we're all racist now because of that. And now that in South Minneapolis, they're building a monument to George Floyd, which is absolutely hilarious. And it's just it's just bullshit. So, but of course, they're going to do it. You know.
Yeah. When you have a society that makes a bunch of criminals the heroes. Like, what type of society are we living in where criminals seem to be the heroes these days?
Yeah,
and there's a difference between a criminal like Robin Hood that's actually trying to do something. You know, Robin Hood was considered a criminal, but he was taken from the rich, giving to the poor. But people like George Floyd, he wasn't. He didn't do anything like that. He was
just a common criminal. That's right. And the reason, you know, you think about this thing, the reason the Robin Hood story is so, like, renowned and unique is because that hardly ever happens in the real world. There are very few criminals with hearts of gold. Usually they're just plain fucking criminals.
That's
you know,
that's
just
right.
To steal from people. You know, just like the thing is, you know, the Lex Luthor thing about the mastermind criminal, you know, the comic books and shit, that never happens either. Because if you're that smart, you should be able to make money legitimately. You know, you don't need to be a criminal. You know, it's like, I don't know. But you're absolutely right. I'm totally with you on this. We are watching our society slowly disintegrate, and it's not very fun to watch, is it? I don't know if us yakking about it makes a difference. I don't know if you see David Strom on the show, but he comes on, and we almost always end with the fact that, you know, he says, "Oh, maybe cumulatively, just by talking about it more, we can maybe wake some people up." I'm trying, you know, whatever. You are too, I think.
Yeah, and I want to talk about what you just said, because I've been thinking about that. That's why I go on a lot of Blog Talk radio shows. We plant seeds, Jim. You have to understand this. We plant seeds. And even though it's me and you talking right now, maybe somebody will stumble onto your show or is listening to your show, maybe a bunch of people. And whether they agree or not, these seeds that we have talked about will be implanted in their head. And it would be a narrative that maybe they spit out later in a conversation with somebody else, and the seeds get transferred in that way, like it's infecting other people. And it just begins by simple words from the bottom.
Right.
Nothing starts from the top. You know, it's always from the bottom, and it grows. I would say that talking. Go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry.
You just brought this full circle. So you're absolutely right. I mean, by us just talking about it, it hopefully plants seeds, and then you got the government that doesn't want us to talk about it. You know, I mean,
exactly.
Shit. It's just crazy.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
I don't know, but I mean, I'm trying. You know, it's like we're all just trying, I guess. You know.
Yeah.
I'm gonna wrap this up for tonight. Okay. Anything
right.
you want to say?
Thanks for having
Anyone
me.
Leave
I got, no, no. Thank
I really
you for
appreciate
having
you
me
calling.
On.
I mean, I hope you understand this. I love talking to you. I really do.
No problem. Thank you. All right. Bye bye.
Yeah. Bye bye. We'll see you. Take care. That's Fink. He's a regular caller here, and I do love talking to him. He's got an interesting point of view, and sometimes we agree, and sometimes we don't. But like he said, it's true though. First Amendment gives us the opportunity to talk about this shit and about anything, really. You know, like I said, you can't threaten violence. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. You can't intimidate people. That's those things are already against the law. But your opinion? Oh, shit. And Think is right about this, too. I don't understand. You know, it's like people are going to say, well, you know, Alex Jones is evil. Well, no, he's not. He's not evil. Now, he may be a little crazy. But God knows, I don't think that's a crime. I mean, I've said that I was saying this on my radio shows like Hawk News. I would defend to the death his right to say stuff. Now, Sandy Hook, that may be nuts. But still, you got fined $1 billion for basically hurting a bunch of people's feelings. That's crazy. I understand why the parents of those people didn't want to hear this. I do understand it. It's awful and horrific. And he's wrong. But that doesn't mean he shouldn't be able to say it, you know, unless you're threatening somebody's life. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you should be able to say anything. That's what the First Amendment is. So anyway, glad Thing called. That was nice. We had a good conversation there. So I'm going to leave it. We're going to end up, we're going to wrap this up tonight. Tomorrow, Robert Powell wrote the book, A Scientist's Guide to UFOs, What We Know and What We Don't Know. I'll hold it just a second. Just in case you actually want to order the book, I better tell you give you the exact title. Hold on just a minute. It's UFOs, A Scientist Explains What We Know and Don't Know. That's the title of his book. Robert Powell, you can look him up on Amazon. The book's on sale. And we're talking to him tomorrow. He's going to be our guest tomorrow. Wednesday, we're taking the night off because I got a doctor's appointment. Jesus Christ. I think Fink told me he's in his 50s, I think. I'm not sure. Well, you gotta enjoy it while you can, buddy. Like, I'm going to the doctor. Like, holy shit. Okay, and Thursday night, we got the UFO panel. That should be really interesting. Jazz Shaw, Mika Hanks, and John Greenwald. I want to thank you folks for listening and watching, whether you're on Blog Talk Radio or Rumble or YouTube. God bless you on YouTube. You know, like Facebook canned us. Like I was telling the thing, I'm expecting sooner or later YouTube will can us too. I'm expecting that, but whatever. But right now we're on there. So if you're watching us, I really appreciate it. We're trying, we're doing our best here, folks. Uncle Donnie, and good night to you, whoever you are. We'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, everyone.